One time, Kinalach, it was Shabbos, it was Friday night, and by the davening of the shul, the Baal Shem Tov was davening, and his Talmidim were davening in the shul, and the shul was full of regular people, and there was Balabatim over there, and kids, and the mommies were in the Viber shul with the girls. And in the back of the shul were the beggars. There were beggars davening in the back of the shul. Some of the beggars were davening with the sitter upside down because they didn't know how to read. And some of the beggars were davening with the sitter the right way and they could read a little bit. And some of them were davening without a sitter because they couldn't even, they didn't even know how to use a sitter so much. But they came to shul because everybody believed in Hashem and wanted to daven to Hashem on Shabbos. And all of a sudden, Baal Shem Tov, he calls his Talmidim to him after the davening, as people are starting to go home, and he points to one of the beggars, and he says, "Would you like to see a very great surprise? I want you to see something about that man, that special man over there, a very special surprise that you don't know about. Would you like to see that?" And of course, the Talmidim said they'd love to see it. And the Baal Shem Tov says, "If you get to see this surprise and this special thing, you will get a very great reward and you will get a very great prize for seeing the great surprise. But you have to make sure that you don't do one thing. If you see this, you have to make sure that you don't laugh. Do not laugh. If you see this special thing, don't laugh. Because if you laugh, forget it. You will not get that great reward and that great prize." And of course, the Talmidim were very, very interested. What are we going to see special about this beggar? And what are we going to see bichlal? And what is the reward? And why should we laugh? What's going to be so funny? But of course, they wanted to go. And so as the people were leaving, the beggar also left. And the Baal Shem Tov, his Talmidim, went out of the shul. And very quietly, without the beggar knowing it, they followed the beggar home. They didn't want him to see that they're there. And he would go down the street, and they would be behind the trees. He'd go on to another street, and they would quietly go and also be behind the trees over there until he went way into the poor part of the town where all of the houses are falling down, they're broken. And this is where the beggar lived. And the beggar goes into his house, and the Baal Shem Tov and his Talmidim were outside looking through the window. Mekinalach bichlal, if somebody's in their house, you should not go and look through the window to see what they're doing. Because this is not a nice Torah way to behave, to go spying on people, to look on people. But over here where the Baal Shem Tov wants to show them something special and teach them something, of course, is going to be something about Torah mitzvahs, for sure. They're not just stam going to see what people are doing. Then of course over here there's a mitzvah involved, and there's a special thing involved. But just stam, if you want to go and look at people in their house, you're not even allowed to do that. And they watch, and the beggar comes into his house. He's smiling. Of course, why is he smiling? The house is falling apart. The furniture is broken. The tables are broken. The chairs are broken. The walls are broken. The ceiling is broken. The paint is peeling off. The floor is broken. Why should he smile? And of course, right away, you see why he's smiling. Because he's looking at the candles burning, and he knows it's Shabbos. And he starts saying, "Good Shabbos, good Shabbos." And his wife comes out in a torn dress. And she also looks like a beggar lady, Nebuch. She's so poor. And she says, "Good Shabbos. It's so good to see you home." and they're both smiling and happy, and he starts singing Shalom Aleichem, Malachi Hashareis, in the most beautiful Nigun, and he's so happy, and he gets done saying the things before Kiddush and Eishes Chayil, singing Eishes Chayil, and he says to his wife, bring out the wine for Kiddush. Bring out the most expensive, the most delicious wine that we should have for Kiddush. Bring out the kind of wine that we're going to have by the Suda when Mashiach comes, that they're going to serve by the Livyasan fish Suda. Let's have the most delicious wine for Kiddush for this beautiful Shabbos. And his wife says, okay, I'll go to the kitchen to get ready for Kiddush. And she comes out, not with a bottle of wine, comes out with two loaves of bread, not even challis. And she says, my dear husband, you're going to make Kiddush on these two loaves of bread because we don't have wine and we don't even have challis. Now, according to halacha, to Shulchan Aruch, if you don't have wine, you're allowed to make Kiddush on the challis. You're allowed to make Kiddush on challis, and there's a certain way to do it. But kinalach, they were so poor, they couldn't even afford challis. So they just had two loaves of regular bread. Challis have eggs and have sugar, maybe some extra oil. They were so poor, they just had a regular weekday kind of bread. Now, if chas v'shalom, a person is so poor, they can't even afford challis, so they have bread, they can make Kiddush on bread. And he was smiling, he was happy. No problem. The breads will be just like the wine, just like the best wine. And he made a beautiful Kiddush. And they washed, and they started eating the bread. And now he says to his wife, bring now the most delicious fish that we should have our beautiful Shabbos Suda, eating the most wonderful, tasty, delicious Shabbos stick of fish. And she says, fine, I'll go into the kitchen and get our fish. She goes in the kitchen. She brings out a bowl of beans with a spoon and two plates. And she says, here is our fish. Of course, they can't afford fish. Fish is too expensive. Beans are very cheap. And at least they fill you up. So she had only beans. And she brings the beans to the table, and she gives her husband a spoon of beans. Here is our fish. This is the only thing they have instead of fish. But Kenalach, he's not upset. He is so happy. And he eats those beans in a way that you tell that he is so happy, and he's enjoying the beans. And believe me, he cannot taste the difference between those beans and the best fish in the whole world. Because he's not eating for the beans, and he's not eating for the fish. He's eating it for the Shabbos, for the Tainik Shabbos. And he certainly has the Tainik Shabbos. He has a very Gishmak Shabbos. And then he sings the Nigun, and he says a little Dvar Torah, and then he says to his wife, time for the chicken soup. Let's have the chicken soup. I'm sure we have a very delicious chicken soup this Shabbos. And she smiles, of course we do. Here it is. And she reaches in the bowl and gives him another spoonful of beans. Oh, wonderful. And he eats up the beans with a big smile on his face. Ah, delicious. And he sings another nigun. And he says another Dvar Torah. Of course, whatever he could know from the Torah. But whatever he was so happy with it. He was not a big Talmud Chochem, but he knew something to say. And then he says to his wife, it's a big mitzvah on Shabbos to have flesh. Let's have flesh. Let's have kugel. Of course. And she gives him another bowl of beans. And he smiles. Oh, we're so lucky. And he eats the beans, Kenalach, with a big, big, happy face. And he could tell he was enjoying it. He was enjoying the Shabbos. And then he has another nigun that he sings, and another Dvar Torah. Let's have dessert. We must have cake. We must have kompot. Let's have the most delicious dessert. Of course, here it is. And she serves him more beans. and then Kenelach. He's saying Shira Malois in a beautiful way. And he benched every word clearly and nicely with a big chayis. And then Kenelach, after the Shabbos meal, he was so happy. He got up and he started singing and dancing. Ashreinu Matov Chokeinu. We're so happy that we have Shabbos. We're so lucky. And his wife got up and she went on her side of the table and she started singing and dancing also. Ashreinu Matov Chokeinu. And as they're singing and dancing and turning around, singing and dancing, like mamash, like Simchas Torah, the Talmidim outside were watching this whole thing. And it looked so funny, you know? One man over here dancing by himself, turning around like a kafis, and a lady in the other side of the room dancing around also, like the ladies, I guess, you know, by a simcha, ladies dance on the other side of the mechitza. So she's dancing just with one person by herself. And they're so happy. But it looks so funny, the Talmidim started to laugh. Not loud. And God forbid, not laughing at them. They're laughing because it was funny. There's two ways to laugh. You can laugh at a person, which is not a nice, or you can laugh with them because it's such a simcha, it's so happy, or maybe it's just so funny, it looks so funny. And Kenelach, all of a sudden the Baal Shem Tov says, uh-oh, you forgot, you're laughing. And all of a sudden they remembered, uh-oh, we weren't supposed to laugh. Because if you laugh, you're going to lose the reward. Oh, can we please have the reward even though we laughed, we forgot? No. But at least you got to see the surprise and the interesting thing. And they begged the Baal Shem Tov to say, what would have been the reward if they would have not laughed? If they would have kept themselves from laughing? Do you remember what the reward would have been?
Yeah. To be the same as the man and lady.
What do you mean the same? They'd have beans every day?
Yeah.
No. What means be the same?
Shabbos.
What was that again?
The joy of Shabbos.
They would have the joy of Shabbos. They would have the tainug Shabbos exactly like that man and woman. If they wouldn't have laughed, Baal Shem Tov says they would have been able to feel as a reward the same geschmack and tainug Shabbos this man, this lady felt on Shabbos, with their simple, simple Shabbos, they would have felt that way. Okay. They lost that reward, and they were not able to feel the tainug Shabbos like them, but still, Kenelach, they got to see what such a special Shabbos was like. The main thing is not the kugel and the chicken and the flesh. The main thing is the tainug Shabbos. Now Noach was feeding the animals 24 hours a day. Of course, he maybe slept a little bit here and there, getting a little nap somewhere. But some animals eat in the day, and some animals eat in the night, and some animals eat in the morning, and some animals eat in the late afternoon. And each animal has a different feeding time. Some animals are up the whole night, and they sleep in the day. And some animals are up the whole day, and they sleep at night. And they have different feeding times. So Noach had to be at the different animals at the time they eat. Do you think that was an easy job for Noach? Or I guess his sons must have helped him to take care of every animal in the world for a year? It's an easy job or very difficult? So Noach was busy. And one time he was late by the lion. And the lion was so hungry and so upset at Noach. And as soon as Noach came into the room of the lion goes over and gives Noach a bite in the leg. And Noach had to limp the rest of the time. He still went around, but he was limping. Now the Medrash says there was a certain birdie called the Urshena bird. And this bird was very different than that lion. One day Noach comes into the animals to feed them on the second floor. And there's such a screaming and noise and animal noises and barkings and birdie noises and tweets and yelling from animals and all kinds of animal, different kind of noises. Because Noach was a little bit late with the food. And as soon as the animals see Noach, they start to make all this noise. Give me the food, give me the food, I'm so hungry, Noach. And of course, Noach could speak all the animal language. And he could understand even what they were saying. Because he could speak birdie talk and elephant talk and tiger talk and lion talk. And bug talk and fly talk and bee talk. But even without understanding the animal language, from all the noise, he knew they were hungry. And they're screaming. And he tries, of course, as fast as he can to go around and give all the animals what they need. And every animal needs different food, but he can't be everywhere at once. And he saw one little birdie, the Urshena birdie, was the only quiet one. Sitting there in the little room quietly, not making a sound. And Noach felt so, you know, good and so happy. That's such a nachas from this little birdie, that the birdie was the only one quiet. And the birdie was looking at him. And he knew the birdie was hungry. And he goes over to the birdie and he says, why aren't you screaming like all the other animals? And the Urshena birdie says, Noach, I know you're trying your best and you're trying to give all the animals food. And I know you'll also give me my food. But I know you can't be everywhere at once. So if I have to wait a few extra minutes to get my food, I'll wait. It's not going to help anything to scream. And Noach was so happy with his birdie's patience and good midos that Noach, who is a tzaddik, he gave the birdie a bracha. And the bracha, as we're going to see, is mida keneged mida. What did the birdie do? The birdie didn't want Noach to come right away. It gave Noach extra time, right? So Noach gave this birdie also a bracha in time. And he said, you know what, birdie? Instead of like all the other animals, you know, you live your life and then you die. You are going to live until Mashiach comes. You are going to live to see Mashiach. This birdie is going to live so long until Mashiach comes. Which means, of course, this birdie is still alive. It never died. And somewhere this birdie is flying around and is going to be able to see when Mashiach comes. And who knows, maybe you saw this birdie outside your window, but you didn't know it was the Urshena birdie. Or maybe it's in a zoo somewhere. Who knows where it is? Maybe it's right there on that tree. The Urshena birdie. Now, why did I tell this in the lunchroom? Because the lady goes around serving the food, and sometimes kids start to scream at the lady, hey, give me noodles, give me tuna, give me salad, I want soup, I want milk. And the lady is going around trying to pour the milk and serve the food, and of course everybody can't get all at once, and she's not an octopus with eight hands to give everybody so many kids at once. Now, Kinalak, it does not help anything to scream at the lady, because they're not going to get faster, and plus it just makes them more nervous, they'll get slower. So those kids who sit quietly and put up their hand, and they wait, so not only it's going to be nicer for the lady and they'll get their food, but I'm sure Hashem will be very happy with them and give them a bracha for being patient instead of nervous. And the same thing, when your mommy's in your house and she's trying to serve, well, maybe you'll also help to serve and get up, and so mommy shouldn't do everything. But let's say it's such a situation that you're sitting by the table and Mommy Taka is serving and giving out. Are you supposed to say, Mommy, give me, Mommy, Mommy, give me? Or are you supposed to be like the Urshena bird? Have patience. Have savlanis. Wait a few extra minutes. Mommy will be happy. It's going to be kibbut av and v'aim. To do a mitzvah of respecting your mommy. And I'm sure Hashem will also give you a big bracha, because you give a little extra time for Hashem, He'll give you extra time too. Mida keneged mida. This story takes place along the ocean in Eretz Israel in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. and Yidden are walking towards Yerushalayim. They just started out from their city. Now we know that Yerushalayim is in the mountains. It's not by the ocean. And this city, this town, was by the ocean. And they just started out to go to Yerushalayim for one of the Shalosh Regalim. So they're walking now on the road by the ocean, and pretty soon they're going to go towards the mountains, towards Yerushalayim. As they're walking, they notice a Roman ship. This is the second base of Mikdash. A Roman ship is in the ocean off of Eretz Israel, and all of a sudden the Roman ship, either it hit a rock or something else happened, and it started to break apart and it started to sink into the ocean. And there were a lot of people on the ship, Romans. And some of the Yidden said, look what's happening to that Roman ship. People are falling off the boat, they're falling into the ocean. They're probably even drowning. And somebody else said, well, maybe it's good for those Romans. Look how much trouble they make for us. Look how many terrible laws they make against us. Look how mean they are to us. Maybe they're getting punished for all the terrible things they do to Jews, those Romans. And Kenelach, one of the Romans who escaped from the sinking ship started swimming towards the shore, towards the sand. And as he's swimming, he takes off his clothes because he had clothes on. They weren't in swimming suits on that boat, they were in clothes. And they fell into the ocean trying to save their lives. And one of the Romans is swimming towards the ocean, towards the beach, and he had to take off his clothes in order to swim, in order to be able to swim easier. And he's the only Roman that reached the beach. The other Romans drowned. And he reached the sand, and because he had no clothes on, he ran to hide behind the rocks. And he saw the group of Yidden coming close. A few minutes later, the group of Yidden reached the place where the Roman was hiding behind the rocks. And he looked out at them. He peeked out to them and he says, please, somebody help me. I have no clothes. I was in a shipwreck. Could somebody please help me? And none of the Yidden went to help the Roman. And some of the Yidden were laughing at him. And some of them were pointing their finger and saying, man, good for you and good for all the Romans that got drowned because they're so mean to us, always making all kinds of terrible gzeiros against us. Now finally you got something against you. All of a sudden, one of the Yidden did a very surprising thing. And he was a tzaddik. His name is Rabbi Lazar ben Shemua. Rabbi Lazar ben Shemua, Kenelach, was a great tzaddik. And he went over to the Roman and he took off his own coat. And he gave it to the Roman. And he says, come with me. We're close by my house. I'm taking you home with me. I'll take care of you. The tzaddik Rabbi Lazar ben Shemua took the Roman to his house and he gave him food and he gave him clothes and he gave him money to be able to get back wherever he has to go, and he helped him and he even kept him for a few days till he rested up, till he felt better, and he gave him food the whole time and took care of him the whole time. And finally the Roman left. And Elazar ben Shemua was the one that helped him. Years later, Kenelach, what happened to that Roman? You never know what's going to happen to a person. This Roman became the emperor, the king of Rome. This happened years later. And when he became the emperor, he was the emperor of the Roman Empire, like the ruler of the world. He was very powerful. And one day he was sitting on his throne and he was thinking about how he's going to rule his kingdom. And all of a sudden, he remembered what happened years ago in the shipwreck. And he thinks to himself, I am now the king over Eretz Israel. I'm the king of over the Jews. I'm the king of all the Jews now because I'm the king over Eretz Israel. And he remembered how the Jews laughed at him. And they didn't help him. And they pointed their fingers. And he remembered how badly he felt. How terrible he felt. And he was so embarrassed. And he remembered the people that were laughing at him and saying all those things. And now he was the king and he decided, I am going to punish those Jews for what they did to me. And he called his officers and his generals and he said, get ready for me, all of the armies, all of my soldiers, all of my generals. We're going to make a war and we're going to wipe out all the Jews from Eretz Yisrael. I'm going to get them back for what they did to me. I'll kill all of them. And he wrote down the decree and he got ready his officers and his generals. And the armies prepared to set out towards Eretz Yisrael. And of course, they blew the trumpets. Beep, 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 beep. They're going to war. And Kinelach the Yidden found out what's happening. And they wanted to send somebody to go to Rome. And they picked Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua. Now, nobody knew that this Roman was the one who became the emperor. But they happened to pick, it was Hashkaka Pratis, Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua, to go to Rome to speak for the Jewish people to the king that he should take away the Gezerah from them and spare them and save them. And Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua traveled to Rome and he went to the palace and they told the king, there's an old rabbi who wants to speak to you. And he said, let him in. And as soon as Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua came into the king's room and the king was on his throne, the king looked down and he saw Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua and he recognized him. He says, oh, this is the only one that helped me. This was the nice man who took care of me. I almost forgot about you. I only remembered everybody that was making fun of me and being not nice to me. And now I remember you. You helped me, yes. The same time, people were so mean to me, but you were so nice to me. I had almost forgotten about you. And now I recognized you. Kinelach, Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua asked the king, please forgive the Jews. They're sorry. We have sent you a gift of gold. Please accept it. Please forgive the Jewish people for what they did. And the king said, no, I don't want to forgive the Jews for what they did because it hurt me so much and they were not nice to me, but I will not go against the Jews with my armies because of your kindness. Because you helped me and you were nice to me and you took care of me. And I remember you gave me your coat. So because of that, I will save the Jews. And he said to Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua, all of the gold that you brought me, I'm giving to you, because I don't need gold. And not only that, because you gave me your own coat, I would like also to do something back for you. And he took Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua to his own treasure house. And in the treasure house was a room of the most beautiful coats in the world. And he says to Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua, please choose for yourself 70 coats. 70 of the most beautiful, expensive, wonderful coats, and please take them for yourself. And he gave Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua 70 coats. Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua went back there to